Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. We'll also have a visit from our Two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our Mavena on Israel, Oshrat Borel. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. It's the very last day of May, which means we've reached the end, more or less, of graduation season here in America. Having attended a few of these graduations over the years, including a number of my own children's commencement exercises, and having spoken at a few of them too, including some of my own, I can tell you that the excitement over the accomplishment almost always outstrips the actual experience of the graduation ceremony. Very few graduation addresses are memorable or even interesting. You know, I think that's the most overplayed song in the world since Pachelbel's Canon in D. How about this more contemporary and also overplayed graduation song?
So make the best of this test and don't ask why. It's not a question but a lesson learned in time. It's something unpredictable, but in the end is right. I hope you had the time of your life.
Okay, enough. But there was at least one graduation experience, a talk, this past month that was both memorable and interesting. It came at Yale University's commencement from Yale's president, Peter Salovey. Salovey is a PhD psychologist by training and profession, a fine academic who has risen to one of the most prominent positions in the entire world of academia. He is also the scion of the famed Soloveitchik family, which has shaped Orthodox Judaism in Europe, the United States, and Israel. And he's a relative of the renowned Rav Yosef Dov Ber Soloveitchik of blessed memory. Salovey proudly connects to this great heritage, and he is a very public Jewish figure, a little unusual for Yale, and in many ways for academia in general, where the many Jews in prominent positions do not always proudly connect to their religion or heritage. In his baccalaureate address to Yale's graduating seniors, entitled Repair the World! With an exclamation point, Salovey opened with a reference to the Mishnaic sage Hillel the Elder. A few weeks ago, I conducted a little thought experiment, he said, referencing Einstein. If a graduating senior asked me to capture the purpose of life after graduating from Yale in just a few words, what would I say? What would that purpose be? Could I articulate your life's mission as you leave Yale on commencement weekend, while standing on one foot? Of course, the phrase standing on one foot, Salovey went on, said, derives from a story about Hillel, the first century BCE rabbi and scholar. He was asked to summarize the meaning of the entire Torah, the Old Testament, while standing on one foot. His reply, "What is hateful to you, do not do to your neighbor. That is the whole Torah. The rest is the explanation of this. Go and study it." Salovey proceeded to outline his own philosophy of life on one foot. There are many perfectly fine answers to the question about your commitments after Yale, the president of Yale continued. What I am going to suggest to you today, however, is that your purpose in life as a graduate is simply this, to improve the world. In Jewish tradition, this is called Tikkun Olam, literally to repair the world. Tikkun Olam is a theme and phrase that has permeated American popular and political culture, President Salovey noted. American clergy, not to mention college deans and university presidents, tend to give so many sermons on Tikkun Olam. There's a joke about an American traveling to Israel to work in an orphanage. He's met by his cousin at the airport. After exchanging greetings, the American asks his Israeli cousin, "How do you say Tikkun Olam in Hebrew?" Salovey closed with a reference to Pirkei Avot, the ethical highlight reel of the Mishnah. Many of you have contributed something new by addressing niches where very little light has been shined, he said, but will these efforts be sustained after your graduation? Or are they merely lines on your resumes? Will there be progress or backsliding? Is Tikkun Olam ever actually finished? Is your work ever truly done? Improving the world is a difficult project to take on because there really is no beginning, middle, or end. There is no bottom line. What may be most challenging is that even after a lifetime of work, further repair may be necessary. Maybe even more than when you started. My predecessor, President Richard Levin, often quoted Rabbi Tarfon, "It is not your responsibility to complete the work, but neither are you free to desist from it." Well, it is hard to imagine the president of a prestigious university anywhere else in the world besides Israel delivering such an unabashedly proud Jewish address. At a time when the headlines highlight anti-Israel activism shading into anti-Semitism on college campuses, moments like these remind us just how uniquely hospitable America has been for Jews, a fact as worthy of celebration as graduation itself. And who knew that Yale had two consecutive Jewish presidents? To play us in this post-graduation period morning, here's some new music from Israel. It's Rotem Cohen's hit love song from last year, Kemat Shehitragalti. I almost got used to it. Almost got used to having coffee alone, doing what I wanted when I wanted, and then suddenly it happened. Love.
Kemat Shehitragalti kvar liyot levad. כמעט שהמיטה שלי בטוחה שאני חוזר לבד גם הלילה דווקא כשהתחלתי להבין שהחיים הם לא משחק ילדים פתאום זה קרה כמעט שהתרגלתי לשתות קפה לבד כמעט שהשכנה כבר התרגלה להיכנס מבלי לפוק וכשבא לך דווקא כשהתחלתי להבין שנחמד לי לצאת עירום מהמקלחת פתאום זה קרה וכבר יותר מדי שנים חיכיתי בלעדייך לא ידעתי מה לעשות כבר כבר יותר מדי זמן כבר עם כל הכאבים שרק ידעתי שהאל שמע אותי ושלח אותך אליי, אליי, עליי, עליי, עליי כמעט שהתרגלתי לחייך מעט כמעט שהתרגלתי לעשות את הדברים בזמן שלי ורק אם בא לי דווקא כשהתחלתי להבין שלחיות איתי זה כמו לחיות ביחד פתאום כמעט שהתרגלתי להכין לי מנה אחת כמעט שהדאגות שלי היו על עתידי ואיך לחיות עם הפחד דווקא כשהתחלתי להבין שבני אדם הם לא יצור של יחד פתאום זה קרה וכבר יותר מדי שנים חיכיתי בלעדיי ידעתי מה לעשות כבר כבר יותר מדי זמן כבר עם כל הכאבים שרק ידעתי שהאל שמע אותי איך הוא שלח אותך אליי כבר יותר מדי שנים חיכיתי בלעדייך אבל לא ידעתי מה לעשות כבר
That was Rotem Cohen's love song, Kemat Shehitragalti. I almost got used to it. When we return in a few moments here on Too Jewish, we'll meet our guest, Chancellor Arnold Eisen, head of the Jewish Theological Seminary and the leading figure in the conservative movement in the world. Find out what challenges the middle movement in American Judaism is facing, how it seeks to overcome them, in a few moments, right here on Too Jewish. We welcome John Ben Asher, head of school for Tucson Hebrew Academy. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Rabbi Kohan.
Tell us about THA.
THA is an incredible school, rich community, strong educational culture. We're a K-8 program and Tucson's only Jewish day school.
With small classes, really a tremendous level of individual attention.
Absolutely. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supporting learning environment for kids.
And those kids go on to succeed academically. This isn't just about Jewish identity.
THA graduates go on to Tucson's best high schools, and they are exceptionally well prepared.
And I've seen some of them go to Ivy League schools, some of the best colleges in the country too, if that's important for parents, which I believe it is.
That's right. THA really paves the way for students. A rich, strong academic foundation, as well as Jewish knowledge, learning, and culture.
And great community. How can people find out more about putting their kids in THA?
You can come visit or find us online, thaaz.org, and give us a call, 529-3888.
That's 529-3888, or visit www.thaaz.org.
If you like fun and games, you'll love this. And this. And even this. Casino del Sol Resort offers more fun under the sun with the newest slots, the best entertainment, and world-class golf. If you want fun, hit the at Casino del Sol Resort in Tucson. Take I-10 East to I-19 exit Valencia West or visit CasinoDelSolResort.com.
We're out there having fun in that warm Arizona sun.
Enterprise of the Pasquagaki Tribe.
We are delighted to welcome the Two Jewish, our guest this morning, Chancellor Arnold Eisen of the Jewish Theological Seminary. He is the seventh chancellor to hold the august post, the most important in the conservative movement, not only in America, but I would say in the world. A longtime sociologist and a careful and thoughtful observer of the Jewish scene. Good morning and welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So the conservative movement is the middle ground in American Judaism, or has always been thought to be so. I'll ask the question, Eliot's question, can the center hold? It's a challenging question in today's world.
And, you know, it's the question we get all the time, and I'm convinced that it can and it must. We don't get any points for being in the center, but what you do get points for, as it were, what makes us very strong and what I think will continue to make us attractive is that we are thoroughly grounded in the Jewish past and our history and tradition and totally 100% engaged with our culture and society that we live in. And I think that balance is really attractive to people, and if we do it well, the conservative movement will not only hold its own, it will grow.
Throughout its history, I think JTS has been known for outstanding scholarship. We live in an age where, I don't know if scholarship's devalued, but depth is not nearly as important to so many people as quick access and instantaneous experience. What does the conservative movement have to offer in these areas?
You know, I think what you say is both correct and incorrect. I mean, people are complicated, that we know. And when I go around the country and talk to Jews, especially the conservative Jews, they do want the elevator speech. They want to know in 30 seconds what conservative Judaism is and how it's different from other kinds of Judaism. And frankly, they want a 60-second speech which they can give their children and grandchildren on why Judaism is different and why Judaism matters. But then, you see, they're also serious people. They're serious in their jobs. They're serious in their personal lives. And they want to go into greater depth. And if you can make things interesting, even compelling, and don't just make it a matter that speaks to the head, but make it a matter that pulls at the heart, then they will stick around. They want to learn more, and they are interested in the kind of depth of experience that conservative Judaism has to offer them. And this is where I think not only being a professor of Judaism, but being a layperson, a Jew in the pew, as it were, a consumer of Judaism, really helps me, because I see Judaism from both sides. I see it from the point of view of the elites who write all the books, and I see it from the point of view of the ordinary people in the pews who, you know, want something they can hold on to, want a way to raise their children, want a life cycle celebration that's going to be meaningful. They want Judaism to be available to them at key moments in their lives. So I think that conservative Judaism scores well on all these points, and it bodes well for our future.
We will continue to explore conservative Judaism and Judaism in general with Chancellor Arnold Eisen of Jewish Theological Seminary when we return in just a few moments here on Two Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side.
That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
We welcome David and Pam of Freedom Smoke. We started talking last week about Freedom Smoke, the smokeless product, no tobacco, to get people off of cigarettes. What are the health advantages to using your product as opposed to smoking?
Thank you, Rabbi Kohan. We have a lot of physicians here in town, from neurologists to ophthalmologists, cardiologists, pulmonologists, sending patients to us because of damaging effects from emphysema, everything of the like that comes from smoking cancerous cigarettes.
And Freedom Smoke International provides all kinds of flavors, pleasurable experience, but not the same health risk.
That's right. You have the same experience as smoking. You have the hand-to-mouth, the mantra of the In-N-Out, as well as vapors compared to cigarette smoke. So there's no secondhand smoke either.
How can people find your product?
They can find us through freedomsmokeusa.com. Our toll-free number, which is here in Tucson, is 800-705-7013.
And then go into a store.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We have 3 stores. We're opening a 4th in the next couple of months here in town.
We will talk more next week. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch, or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's T-O-O, Jewish Radio 18. Or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through our website, twojewishradio.com, or download us from there at the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. We are now pleased and serene to welcome back a recurring feature of Two Jewish, Zen Judaism, a series of koans. For you, a little enlightenment. When faced with disaster, be calm and serene. Breathe deeply and fully. And then shry, Oy Gewalt, from your inner core. Consider the tree, standing steady in the face of rain and sun, weathering the chaos of the world without bending. You too can be like the tree, but then you'll never get anywhere. Better to become an accountant, like your cousin Bernie. And finally, what is the sound of one hand clapping? Who knows? A series of koans of Zen Judaism. We welcome our Mivina and Israel Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
Oshrat, we both have a special connection to Ethiopians. Yours is stronger. Mine might be even older. When I lived there in 91, 92, I went regularly to an absorption center for Ethiopians who had just come to Israel, and some of those miraculous operations, I guess is the right term. And Ethiopians are now an important part of Israeli society, an incredible population, but a complex situation. Let's talk about them a little bit.
By the way, you will be surprised, but also in 91, when I was young, a teenager, my mother was the chair of VITSO in Beit She'an, and she helped absorb in Revaya Absorption Center. So I used to go with my mother to visit.
I worked at Amerikas Klita in Jerusalem, which was an old hotel called Malon Shalom, and set up programs there. So we're on the same page.
Yeah. You know, there is one nice story that once we brought like a new clothing for them, and some of them were Levi's, I can't forget it, and they just wear them with all the labels, how do you say?
The Levi's label on
everything,
the top.
Like they didn't took anything, and
they left all
forget.
Of the labels on.
And they thought it's part of the jeans
the decoration.
Jacket.
Yeah.
So it was nice. Recently was not so good time for Ethiopians in Israel. It's, you know, almost 33 years since they, you know, the first immigrant from Ethiopia. And I think from the very first years, they understand here in Israel that it's a different, it's different olim, different new immigrants. They came out, they came to Israel with a huge, huge gap in terms of culture and everything, and with
education.
Of course, education, and with a huge dream. You know, Jerusalem of God. It's that they thought like Jerusalem is all about like angels on this. Mamash, there is a lovely, lovely stories, and so I know that Israel did along the years a lot of good work together with the Jewish community all over the world. But it's again, they are still struggling. 33 years later, they are still struggling, and almost all the indicators are not so good, not in terms of education. Sorry, not in terms of serving in the army. High rate at the Israeli jails. You know.
Yeah, suicide rates are
suicide
higher,
rates, violence
rates are higher,
into
violent crime. All of those sort of indicators you look for. The absorption of the Ethiopians was often trumpeted as a great success. Now it's a more complicated picture. Is Israel focused on improving the situation of Ethiopians?
First, yes, and only because the recent, you know, few weeks ago, all
there
the whatever we had in Israel. But there is also a lot of great success among this. But, you know, it's always the few...
Well, there have been members of Knesset.
Yeah, members of the Knesset.
Business leaders and heads of the IDF, generals in the IDF have been Ethiopians. But that doesn't mean that everybody's raised up to the same level. Actually, in the recent Miss Israel. This Ethiopian woman.
Tahun,
So, I mean, it's wonderful, but obviously a lot of work left.
There's a lot of work to do.
Maybe we'll talk about some of the ways that's working next week when we come back.
Good.
Thanks, Ashrat.
Bye.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We've been talking about what attracts isolated or, anyway, individuals, usually teens or early 20s males, to join terrorist organizations, including Islamist terrorist organizations, to want to go be recruited into ISIS. And you speculate, you know, sort of at the end of last week's session, whether, you know, who would we think would do it, or who would I think would do it? And I think it's mostly guys who don't fit in, haven't found a purpose in life, feel somehow excluded from society. Is that correct? That seems to be the profile.
Well, there are also female recruits, first of all. I mean, it may not be exactly 50-50, but there's enough women that it's not like 1 in 100. And second of all, before we started talking today, you told me an interesting case of the reverse of Israel's security services recruiting a Hamas guy. And that, I think, provides an interesting example of what the attraction is for people who are not motivated by religion is a place where they fit in, a family that appreciates them, a framework, a direction to their lives. I mean, it's often kids who are sort of lost or directionless or spinning around doing things that even to them are meaningless. You know, they may be partying, or they may consider college meaningless, or whatever they're doing doesn't give them a sense of fulfillment. So they're looking for something that does. And a good recruiter may spot them like a talent scout and recruit them for their own purposes.
You know, the story, the Hamas story, is about I think the movie and the book are called The Green Prince, and it's about literally the son of the head of Hamas who became a recruit for the Israeli secret services. And what comes out in the course of the book and the movie is that he was always, you know, the smartest kid in his family, but he never felt totally accepted somehow. And eventually, at the end of the story, it turns out he's converted to Christianity and moved to the United States. You know, protective custody, whatever, new identity. But you think, like, that's, it's so interesting. It's not that these kids are necessarily untalented, unable, or even that they're really kids, that these young adults are, but that they find some sense of purpose, which tragically is a sense of purpose in destroying people's lives and blowing things up and attacking the entities that exist.
And I also think that there's a component of the population that feels unnoticed, like no one ever pays attention to me. And they want to be known, and they would rather be remembered for something bad that they were good at, like killing people,
than not remembered,
than not noticed at all. Hmm. So in the case of a young adult, says, you know, nobody knows who I am, my life is meaningless, whatever, this gives me a chance to gain recognition, to be valued, to be appreciated, to be remembered. There's an attraction, I think, that is not remotely religion-based, and it speaks to a lack of something in Western societies and cultures, and particularly modern family life, that so many young people seem to be vulnerable to this sort of thing. I mean, in older times, it was like cults, like the Jonestown cult,
right?
Or others.
Or I mean,
you
or
can remember a lot.
Sure.
Okay, so
yeah, lots.
I mean, I think it's sort of the same thing. It's just a question of who's out there recruiting and what, how nefarious is their purpose.
Really interesting, and often with terrible and tragic results. Thanks, Tom. We will talk next week.
I look forward to it.
When we return on Too Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service. Jaime enters a Catholic church and heads for the confessional. When the priest asks him, "Tell me, why have you come, my son?" he answers, "Some son. I'm 93 years old. My wife, who was 91, died a year ago. We were happily married for 64 years, but last night I had crazy, joyous sex with a 27-year-old supermodel." The priest is shocked and aghast. "When was your last confession, old man?" Jaime replies, "Why would a Jewish man like me go to confession? I've never been before." The priest is confused. "But if you're Jewish, why are you telling me this story?" And Jaime replies, "I'm telling everyone." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week, our portion Bahalotcha from the Book of Numbers is filled with a series of incidents and events from the wilderness days, as well as a couple of important commandments. It's in this week's portion that instructions are given to create the first menorah, the seven-branch candelabrum that's become the most enduring symbol of Judaism. It's also here that we get the first rumblings of rebellion that will explode into full-fledged revolt against Moses and Aaron in just a few more weeks in the disastrous story of Korach. But most important, in this week's Sedra, there is a peculiar little story about gossip. Moses has married a new wife, and his brother and sister Aaron and Miriam don't think much of her. So they begin to talk about her behind her back, and about Moses behind his back, circulating rumors and gossip. She isn't of the right ethnicity. They don't like her influence on Moses. She probably laughs inappropriately or wears her hair too long. The response by God is swift and decisive. Miriam, although oddly not Aaron, comes down with a dread ailment. Moses' siblings soon realize the error of their gossiping ways. They repent and are healed. But the point is made. Gossip and slander are among the most destructive influences in society. If we don't avoid them, we will indeed have tsoros, trouble and heartache. If we can avoid them, we have every chance to build a society of holiness and goodness. It's a great message today. The Talmud teaches gossip injures three people, the speaker, the listener, and the subject. It hurts the person who gossips, the one who listens to gossip, and the person who is gossiped about. All are morally damaged by the experience, and no one benefits. Circulating rumors, sharing personal information about others, accurate or not, is not the way to create genuine community or intimacy. Lashon hara, the unethical use of speech, is attractive, but it is wrong and destructive. There are many other things to speak about, all more valuable. A famous dictum says that great minds speak about ideas, smaller minds speak about events, and the smallest minds speak about others. May we learn from our portion of Baha'u'llah that the best way to use speech is to build, heal, and learn, not to engage in gossip. When we return in a moment here on Two Jewish, our guest, Professor Arnold Eisen, the Chancellor of the Jewish Theological Seminary, will explain what makes conservative Judaism the right approach in the contemporary world. Find out what he thinks and what we can learn when we come back in a few moments here on Two Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursdays, my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
If you like fun and games, you'll love this. And this. And even this. Casino del Sol Resort offers more fun under the sun with the newest slots, the best entertainment, and world-class golf. If you want fun, hit the... At Casino del Sol Resort in Tucson, take I-10 East to I-19 exit Valencia West or visit CasinoDelSolResort.com.
Well, they're out there having fun in that warm Arizona sun.
Enterprise of the Pasquagaki Tribe.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
It has been a year since the terror attack on the Jewish Museum in Brussels, and there is deep international concern that the rise of anti-Semitism shows no sign of diminishing. In fact, it seems to be increasing. In particular, instances in Europe of violent attacks on Jews and Jewish institutions are rising. As Jeffrey Goldberg said in a long article in the Atlantic magazine entitled, "Is it time for the Jews to leave Europe?" Well, maybe. France's 475,000 Jews represent less than 1% of the country's population, yet last year, according to the French Interior Ministry, 51% of all racist attacks targeted Jews. The statistics in other countries, including Great Britain, are similarly dismal. In 2014, Jews in Europe were murdered, raped, beaten, stalked, chased, harassed, spat upon, and insulted regularly for being Jewish. "Dirty Jew" rang out in the streets, as did "death to the Jews" and "Jews to the gas." Well, Europe has long had deep anti-Semitic roots. It sometimes appears that hatred of Jews lives on in the very soil of the continent, whether there are any living Jews left to hate there or not. Some make the case that in the wake of the Holocaust, there's been a period of weakened anti-Semitism in Europe. The guilt over the annihilation of 6 million Jews and the entire extraordinary culture of European Jewry and all that Jews contributed to cultural, scientific, and historical flourishing of the continent has led to a period of relatively weak anti-Semitism. For about 50 years, anti-Semitism was suppressed in Europe, and open hatred of Jews led to ostracism and hostility for the perpetrator. Even the populist anti-Semites, like Le Pen the Elder in France, were met with deep revulsion by all civilized Europeans, and most Europeans see their home as the most civilized place on the planet. But that period of lowered anti-Semitism clearly ended a few years ago, and Holocaust museums and memorials and concentration camp visits no longer seem to help in keeping back the inherent European belief that Jews are somehow deserving of persecution. Soon, perhaps, we will again see a general move towards viewing our people as the fitting subject of, God forbid, annihilation again. What makes this new era of anti-Semitic violence in Europe different from earlier ones is that traditional Western patterns of anti-Semitic thought have now merged with the potent Muslim Judeophobia. Violence against Jews in Western Europe today, according to statistics, appears to come mainly from Muslims, who in France, the epicenter of Europe's current Jewish crisis, outnumber Jews 10-1. But the current anti-Semitism in Europe is filled with old-time Christian, Nazi, and fascist stereotypes and slanders. The marriage of anti-Israel rhetoric and obsession with the rise to activity of the formerly latent European hatred of Jews is dangerous. Ron Lauder said it at the 70th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz, an event I attended in Poland in January. In Europe today, it looks more like 1933 than 2015. Well, I think that's an exaggeration, but it is still sobering and troubling to see the damage being done to living, vital, and of course historically critical Jewish communities and individual Jews all over Europe today. And blaming the war in Gaza last summer misses most of the point. This is the revival of an age-old scourge, the evil of anti-Semitism, in the very places where it has for so long flourished. Israel is the excuse, not the reason. A radicalized and radicalizing population of immigrant Muslims is the catalyst, and an environment in which Jews are being attacked and must live under police protection is the result. The long-term prospects for Jewish life in Europe have changed dramatically over recent years. You know, since I last visited the then revitalizing Jewish communities of Central Europe 18 years ago, it has changed a lot. The future for Jews on this supposedly civilized continent appears increasingly bleak. In other news, sad news too, Anne Mira died last week.
Well, we haven't even been formally introduced.
How do you do?
How do you do?
I'm Hershey Horowitz.
I'm Mary Elizabeth Doyle.
You know,
some of my best friends are... I love you people. I think it's terrific the way you folks are always planting trees over there. It's really nice, though, you know, how all our holidays come at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
I love that one you folks have around Christmas time. What do you call it? You know, the one with all the candles. Chanukah, that's beautiful.
Oh, you mean Hanukkah?
Yeah, Hanukkah.
No, Hanukkah. C-H is pronounced chuch.
Oh, I see. Well, Merry Christmas.
Anne Mira was a classically trained theater actress from an Irish Catholic family in Brooklyn. In the troupe that became Second City, she met and later married Jerry Stiller, a Jewish boy from Brooklyn. They soon developed a comedy routine together and became a real-life overnight success, playing on their religious differences. Both very funny people, they appeared many, many times on the Ed Sullivan Show. Sullivan himself was an Irish Catholic married to a Jewish woman. He loved Stiller and Mira, as did Johnny Carson. Their comedy albums were a success, and after the breakup of the also-Jewish Nichols and May routine, they were the number one man-woman comedy duo in the U.S. through the 1960s. Anne Mira had a long career on stage, and the large and small screen, was nominated for 4 Tonys and an Emmy, and won a Writers Guild Award. Not so well known is the fact that Anne Mira converted to Judaism in 1961, 6 years after she and Jerry Stiller married, and before the birth of their children Amy and Ben Stiller, Ben, of course, the actor, director, and so on. Anne was an active, practicing Reform Jew for the rest of her life. May her memory and the humor she and Jerry created together live on. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews Around the World.
Our brother, our brother.
We welcome back to Two Jewish our distinguished guest. Chancellor Arnold Eisen is the seventh chancellor of Jewish Theological Seminary, the central institution for the education of rabbis, educators, cantors, and in many ways the most important institution of conservative Judaism in the world, and his is perhaps the most important position. A non-rabbi who became chancellor, we'll explore that a little bit. Chancellor Eisen served in the Department of Religious Studies at Stanford University, Jewish philosophy at Tel Aviv University. He was trained at Hebrew University and Oxford and Penn as a sociologist and a student of religion. I want to ask you about becoming chancellor and not being a rabbi. That was an interesting position. Can you explore that a little bit when that first occurred?
Sure. You know, from my side, it was kind of a strange thing to do as well, but I reached a certain point in my life. I was in my mid-50s at that point when you think again about what you're really doing in life and what you want this next chapter of your life to be about.
So that should be happening for me like now. So
there you go. So, right? I hope you're ready.
I don't think so, but go ahead.
I had the door open waiting for something to come, and I kind of took an emotional barometer of myself, and I said, what excites me most? What do I get most passionate about? And though I love teaching undergraduates and graduate students at Stanford, my work with the Jewish community, and especially training Jewish leaders, was where I felt most fulfilled. And so when JTS came along and asked me if I'd be interested in this position, after resisting a couple times, because I knew it would be a lot of work, a lot of travel, I said, okay, let's talk about this. I can tell you what got me. JTS had a chair of the board named Gershon Kex, who's a wonderful man, and he's a great public relations executive who knows exactly what to say to people. And he said to me the following sentence. He said, you've been giving advice to the American Jewish community as a scholar for something like 30 years now. We don't need kibitzers. We need leaders. Come be a leader. That got me, because the idea of being a leader and heading a major institution and training the next generation of leaders, that was a real opportunity. Now, from the rabbi's side, it was a bit of a shock, as you said, but I think they came around within a year or two because they saw that having a non-rabbi in the position of supporting rabbis, as it were, speaking like a rabbi, is worth more than just having a rabbi do it, because people say, oh, of course he's going to say that, he's a rabbi. But not being a rabbi, you know, Stanford professor says these things, it means a lot. So tomorrow we're going to have an ordination ceremony of new rabbis. We're going to invest in new cantors at JTS. And I'm going to give a talk. It's going to be a lesson explaining the prayer Matovu. I'm going to speak exactly like I was a rabbi. And I can bet you there are going to be people who are going to listen to it differently because it's coming from the chancellor who's not a rabbi rather than from a rabbi.
Yeah, fascinating. No man is a prophet in his own country, so maybe it's helpful to have a non-rabbi saying rabbinic things.
maybe so.
You are a sociologist and an excellent one by training. The American Jewish community is always a changing entity. It's always been dynamic. Intermarriage is now not a danger on the horizon or something to be resisted. It's a fact of life for much of the American Jewish community. This has always proven to be a great challenge for all Jews, but a greater challenge for the conservative movement than, say, the reform movement. Can you explore sort of what that change has meant?
Sure. So in order to do that, I'm going to have to answer a question you didn't ask me, which is how all this fits into America, because it's important to recognize that everything happening to Jews right now, and particularly the conservative Jews, is happening to Americans in general. So when the well-known Pew report on Jews was issued last year, people didn't notice that the Pew Foundation had just issued a whole series of reports about Protestants and Catholics and other religious groups in America. And in fact, this past week, I don't know if you talked about it on your show, they just came out with another report about Protestants.
Yeah.
The lesson is that every single thing that's happening, whether it's intermarriage or declining membership or what we call religious switching, they call it faith influx, all of this is totally American. Jews are intermarrying, obviously, because other Americans want to marry them, and other Americans are marrying Americans from different religious and ethnic backgrounds. People are leaving synagogues because they're leaving churches in droves. People are switching affiliations because that's what Americans do. So it's important to remember this. And I speak to synagogue, you know, boards and leaders, as I did this week, and I tell them, don't beat yourself up. It's not that you're doing something wrong. It's that you're faced with a situation that Jews have never faced before, And the cutting edge of that, the most direct impact of that, as you said, is intermarriage. So the Reform movement has a position on intermarriage where many, many Reform rabbis perform intermarriages. And as a result, Reform membership has grown in recent years from these intermarried couples. Reform practices something called patrilineal descent, where the religious identity of the child is not only a function of who the child's mother is, but who the child's father is as well. So you can have a non-Jewish mother and a Jewish father, and in a Reform synagogue, that child can be raised as a Jew, whereas you go down the street to the conservative synagogue, which does it the traditional way, where the religion follows the mother, and that child of a Jewish father and a non-Jewish mother is not considered a Jew. And that has raised definite problems for conservative congregations. We're losing members because of that. I think it's the right stance to take, but I think if you're going to take that stance, you've got to combine it with a kind of openness and a kind of welcoming. And you've got to say the paradoxical thing to members of your congregation whose kids or who themselves are going to marry non-Jews: I've known you all your life. I love you as part of this congregation. I can't do your marriage ceremony because conservative rabbis can't perform intermarriages, but I will help you in advance of that ceremony, and the day after you get married, I hope that you and your spouse will become active participants in our congregation. Your non-Jewish spouse has a lot to offer us. I hope that the two of you will decide to raise non-Jewish kids. I hope that your spouse will consider conversion sooner or later, but we want you here. You are both welcome here. We want you as a full part of this community. And I think that that message is more and more being sent by conservative rabbis and conservative leaders, and it's doing something. It's changing the nature of conservative congregations. And so I think you're going to see maybe an arresting of the trend you talked about, maybe a reversal of the trend you talked about. I think that we've just got to get through this patch, and I think we're going to have stronger communities as a result.
The process of the conservative movement's institutional relationships, you know, between, say, the Rabbinical Assembly, the Cantor's Assembly, the Jewish Theological Seminary, the other United Synagogue, it's always been a little, I don't know, confusing to those of us on the outside exactly how
and
all these
interactions. And to those of us on the inside as well. Come on. it's not easy stuff.
Well, no, it's not.
This is not theology. This is organization. This is hard.
That's good to know that. I appreciate it. If it's hard for you, then I feel much better about the whole thing. Have you taken any initiatives to try to smooth relationships that, frankly, have not always been so agreeable?
So what you should know and your listeners should know is that behind the scenes, I think the relationships are night and day better than they were in the past. There's an enormous amount of informal consultation and coordination that goes on behind the scenes. None of us makes a major move without informing the others. And, you know, after long experimentation, which is very successful, the leaders of conservative Judaism realized that we're on the same page and we trust each other. And so we don't have to clear our statements with one another before we issue them. We can count on each other not to do anything that's going to embarrass us or that we're seriously going to disagree with. So I don't clear my various pronouncements and statements with the leaders of the Rabbinical Assembly or of the United Synagogue or the Men's Club or the Women's League. But I work very closely with them, and I know them, and they trust me. And we're on the phone with each other a lot, and we meet in person a lot. So in that sense, it's better. But the matter we laughed about a minute ago is unfortunately still true for historical reasons that you probably don't want me to go into, but I'm a historian of American Judaism, so I'd be happy to explain them at some point. The Reform movement began as an organized, unified movement with the college as part of and owned by that movement. Conservative Judaism really began in America with JTS, and then one by one, JTS founded all the other organizations that we know of as conservative Judaism, and then one by one, those organizations became independent of JTS, so you now have a seminary and about 10 other independent organizations, rather than having one movement with one head of it at the top. So people can disagree about which method of running things is more efficient. I don't know. There's opinions on both sides of that, but you're absolutely right. I have to make 10 phone calls. I have to get 12 people in a room when I want to gather opinions from all streams of conservative Judaism. And it's not simple for anybody to understand. And at the bottom line, it makes fundraising very difficult because our donors are many of the same donors, and they're getting publicity from 12 different places, asked to write 12 different checks. And that gets in the way. You're absolutely right.
Sounds like there might be a consolidation effort somewhere in the future. I want to talk about Israel a little bit. Yizhar Hess, who was our shliach here in Tucson and was on this radio show for several years as our specialist on Israel, now heads the Mosorti movement. Can you talk a little bit about developments in Israel for the conservative movement and what the future looks like there?
Yes. So Yizhar, I'm glad you got to know him in Tucson. Yizhar is a great guy, and he's doing a great job. And what he brings to that job is his Israeliness, if I could put it that way.
Yeah.
You know, he's not an immigrant to Israel. He speaks vernacular Hebrew. He writes really forcefully. He's got a column in the paper that tens of thousands of people read. And he's got an uphill battle on his hands, let's be honest. And the battle just got more uphill the last week when you have a new coalition agreement that puts the Haredi parties back in the government, which already is signaling further discrimination against conservative and reform Jews. I mean, you have Orthodox Jews in Israel, like Rabbi Shlomo Riskin, who used to be the well-known rabbi at Lincoln Square Congregation in New York City, who cannot do conversions in Israel that are recognized by the chief rabbinate as legitimate. Imagine you have a leading Orthodox rabbi, the head of a major settlement, a major Israeli city, Efrat, whose conversions are not recognized by the chief rabbinate. And how much more so will they not recognize the conversions done by reforming conservative rabbis? You had a group of JTS students who visited the Knesset a few weeks ago, and they wanted to say mincha, and they were informed that in the Knesset, only Orthodox services are allowed. Conservative and reform Jews are not allowed to pray. Can you imagine? So in that environment, where Orthodoxy is state-sponsored, conservative Judaism does not have a level playing field, and it's been harder for us. And even so, there's something like 70 Mosorti congregations, many of them new, many of them really beginning to flourish, many of them attracting native-born Israelis like Yizhar Hess. So I think if you ask me to prophesy, I would say it's a hard road ahead, but the wind is at our backs, because I don't think that Haredi Judaism is ever going to be the dominant Jewish stream of Israeli society, because Israel is too modern. Israel is too up-to-date. Israel is too high-tech. And if you're not college-educated, and you're not serving in the army, and you're not living the Israeli lifestyle, you are not going to attract the majority of Israelis to your kind of Judaism. And that's why I think the future is really with us. I'm quite optimistic about that.
I want to thank Chancellor Arnold Eisen for a terrific visit here on Too Jewish. People want to find out more about JTS. They can go to, is it JTS.org?
JTSA.org.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I got that wrong. You made one mistake and I made another one. JTSA.edu.
Of course. JTSA.
Yeah,
somebody will get this right. They'll tweet us.
If you go to JTS, I think you get a Christian seminary in Carolina somewhere, but jtsa.edu gets you to us, and the website is terrific and has all sorts of good stuff on it.
Thank you so much. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 o'clock. Our guest will be Dr. Eyal Fruchter, the head psychiatrist for the Israel Defense Forces and the man who first counseled Gilad Shalit after he was freed from multi-year captivity in Gaza. Our playout this morning comes from a classic and very beautiful Yiddish song, a lullaby, Shlof Shein Mein Yankele, Sleep Well, My Jacob. You will learn Chumash and Gemara. It's by the great Yiddish songwriter Mordechai Gebirtik of Krakow, Poland, as sung by Yaakov Shapiro. My friends, may you be blessed with a Shavua Tov, a good week and a week, we pray, of peace.
Muss noch die Mame singen ein Lulu. Ein Ingele, was hat schon ein alle Zehndala. Muss noch die Mame singen ein Lulu. Ein Ingele, was hat schon ein alle Zehndala. Und wird mit Masel bald in Cheder gehen. Und lernen Wetter, Chumisch und Gemore. Soll weinen, wenn die Mame wiegt ihm ein. Und lernen Wetter, Chumisch und Gemore. Soll weinen, wenn die Mame wiegt ihm ein. Ein Gelewusler.